Welcome to Legend Lore with Luis and Lauren, where we talk about Pathfinder 2nd Edition.
I'm Luis, and I'm a developer at Paizo, working on the Pathfinder Lost Omens lines. I've been playing tabletop RPGs for over 15 years, and I've written for dozens of Pathfinder products. I'm also the GM for Valiant, and I write the Monsters Physique blog here on the No Direction Network.
And I am Lauren, your Dova Queen, and I've been playing RPGs for almost 20 years. I write the Bend the Knee blog here on No Direction, and you can also watch me play in the Adventurous, Stellar, and Three Ring Adventure podcasts. And this week, we're talking about the Bard.
Now, before we get started, we just want to say that although we know a lot about what we're talking about when it comes to Pathfinder, we want to remind you that we're not providing any kind of official answers. We're here to offer advice, and you can use that however you like. Remember that the official word from Paizo is the only official ruling out there. However, don't forget, it's your game. Do what works best for your table.
So, bards stand alongside the rogue, or at least this is the way I see it, as some of Pathfinder's premier jacks of all trades. They support with their spells and with their compositions. They have a pretty fair amount of skills. And they have enough hit points that they can duke it out up front if they need to, if at least for just a while. You can basically build the bard to fit almost any role in their party, and they won't be bad at it. But you're probably not going to outshine the class whose main deal is to dominate in that role. Like, say, a champion would at tanking the hits. Some common examples of the bard that you might know of. Have you ever heard of Shakespeare?
Billy Shakes.
What about Bill and Ted, who had some grade of adventure, I'm told. Jack Black, Stephen King, pretty much any kind of actor. Well, really, just anyone who's like, main thing is making some kind of art. And in Pathfinder, the bard is one of your charisma casters. They use the occult spell list because reasons. And they gain these powerful support skills right out of the gate. But what I want to know, here's my biggest question, Luis. I don't think you can make this fit the Batman test. How would you ever make the bard fit the Batman test?
Okay, so bards have bardic knowledge and tend to know a lot about the world, mostly because they've learned it through songs and tales and stuff, but they always seem to have the information on any particular subject. And you know who is really smart, who happens to be a scientist, who happens to be a learned individual?
Tony Stark.
Yes. And you know who's similarly intelligent?
Bruce Banner.
Exactly. It turns out a lot of superheroes are like bards. Spider-Man's like a bard because he knows a lot of stuff. And Mr. Fantastic. And, oh, some guy named Batman is also very smart. So I would say Batman's intelligence allows him to be much like a bard. And if you happen to watch Justice League Unlimited back when that was a thing, there is a particular episode where they have Batman sing a song on stage, and it is marvelous, proving that if he needs to, he can do a performance.
That's really something. I kind of want to go and watch that now, because I can't even imagine the Dark Knight serenading me under the moonlight.
I'll share that with you later, so you can enjoy it. Anyone who's listening, go look up Batman singing M.I. Blue, and you'll get to enjoy this as well.
Now, in the system, Bard's primary ability is going to be Charisma. It's what fuels their spells and a lot of their bardic abilities. You have 8 hit points plus your Constitution modifier, and you're going to be an expert in Perception.
Some good eyes there. The bard begins trained in both fortitude and reflex and is an expert in will and has quite a bit of skills right out of the gate. They're trained in occultism, they're trained in performance, and they're trained in an additional 4 skills plus their intelligence modifier.
Much like every other class, you're trained in simple weapons, but much like the rogue, you also get your choice of Well, not your choice. You get all of these things. You get the longsword, the rapier, the sap, the short bow, the short sword, the whip. You're trained in light armor, so you're not really gonna be donning any full plate, but that's fine. That's for wussies. And you're trained in your occult spell attack rolls and your occult spell DCs.
Which ties into the very first big thing that you get from your class, occult spell casting. You cast spells spontaneously. You gain access to your spell repertoire and cantrips and heightening and everything that comes with that. And you cast spells from the occult spell list so you can do mysterious things and pull great knowledge from the ether and weird esoteric stuff like that.
In addition to your occult spell casting, you have the real reason you came here. Your composition spell casting. And to my knowledge, this is the only class so far that has a cantrip focus spell. Is that right?
That was the case up until the APG, and now the witch has cantrip spell.
Oh, that's right.
Cantrip hexes. So.
That's right.
But that was the case during the playtest, so it was a very long time that the bard was the only one doing that.
So, you're going to have a focus pool of one focus point, just for starting out, just for picking up the bard and being that. You're going to get whichever your one focus spell is from the muse that you pick, from the thing that inspires your bard. Enigma will give you True Strike, Maestro will give you Soothe, Polymath will give you Unseen Servant. But all bards are going to gain the composition cantrip, Inspire Courage, which is the thing that we all love. One action, 60 feet. Everybody around you gets plus one to hit. Can't get much better than that.
No, that's really the classic. Plus one hit, plus one damage, and a bonus to save against fears. It's great. Composition cantrips are essentially your bard performances, your bard songs that you will do to help others or yourself when it comes to any number of adventuring things.
And at this point, I will go ahead and let listeners know, I'm sorry. I absolutely hate bards. And this is why I can't imagine. Your buddy brings a long sword and a shield. Your other friend standing at the front lines with full plate. You've got someone in the back slinging fire. And here comes you with a lute, going to serenade these people who are shedding blood? Like, it's the worst. But I feel like I have a workaround. Like, I do run bards, but they are never song-oriented. It doesn't say that Inspire Courage has to be a song. Nope. One of the characters I'm playing now, what I'd like to do is I'd like to throw fire and then use Inspire Courage. And I just say, the fire, because she like shapes it into like beautiful animals. The fire is so beautiful that you are inspired. Have plus one to hit. It's perform pyrotechnics, baby. Another idea I've had for like a long time that I haven't done is I want to have like a writer, you know, and like they like write a book and somebody reads the book, they get Inspire Courage. I mean, you couldn't do that in battles. Like in battle, you'd have to just like, I don't know, like chapter one. And then everybody's like, yeah, I get it. I don't know how it'd work, but I just can't stand a singing bard. I can't stand it.
Well, that writer sounds more like it could be like a poet, and you'd say inspiring poetry mid-combat or something.
Yeah, I could see that too. I can't wrap my head around taking someone seriously who's trying to pluck strings in the middle of a bloodbath.
That's fair. Maybe my mime bard will be more serious than that. So, let's move on here. So, as Lauren mentioned, your compositions come from a variety of sources. Some of these are your muses, and your muse is basically the big reason you go out and bard. You have a number of different muses that represent your inspiration and possibly where you draw your power from. And there are four at this point, three in the core rulebook and one in the advanced player's guide. The first is the Enigma Muse, which is all about mystery and trying to find hidden secrets. It grants you access to the Bardic lore feat and adds True Strike to your spell repertoire. The Maestro is all about inspiration, and it's very much your classic bard. They grant the Lingering Composition feat and add soothe to your spell repertoire.
The Polymath is your jack of all trades. They're your bard who's kind of going to be good at anything. They're going to start out with the versatile performance feat, and they're going to add Unseen Servant to your spell repertoire.
And finally, the Warrior Muse is all about battle. Battlefield is their stage, it says. And in addition to granting fear to your spell repertoire, you gain the Martial Performance feat, which is all about becoming trained in martial weapons.
In addition to all of those things you start with, as a bard, you're going to have signature spells the same way as a sorcerer does.
And as you progress, you're eventually going to reach expert, master, and legendary proficiency with your spellcasting. And come 19th level, you've mastered your magnum opus, and that's when you get access to your 10th level spellcasting. A lot of what you do is tied into your muses, so other than your spellcasting, everything else is going to come out from your feats and stuff like that.
Luis, there's a lot of stuff here.
Yes.
What would it actually look like to build a bard in-game?
Let me tell you a tale about one possible bard that you could be. So, we like to make builds here on Legend Lore. And
it's my favorite.
And we are not stopping even for the bard to... we're going to make another build here. I decided to go with a very classic bard. I didn't have any particular gimmick or cool thing I wanted to do. I just wanted to see what a standard bard might be and give people an idea of the classics that you can work with and then let people build from there and tweak that as they like. So pick whatever ancestry you want. If you happen to have a charisma penalty or charisma flaw, it might be a little harder for you, but ultimately that's your choice. You can be a dwarf if you want. Be a dwarf who, I don't know, sings tavern songs all the time, and that's more fun than weird songs about heroics. Anyway, pick your ancestry. I'm going to pick the Maestro Muse for my bard. I'm going to go very classic here and just do a lot of inspiring things, doing with my inspiring courage. Lingering Composition helps you keep that up and running in combat, so you don't have to focus or spend one of your actions every round to keep that going if you don't want. It lets you move around a lot easier, cast other spells, lets you attack if need be. But whatever you end up taking, come level 2, you're going to get a feat. I am going to take Multifarious Muse, which lets me gain the power of another muse, and I'm going to go into the Enigma Muse as well, and that grants me the first level feat that muse grants, which in this case is Bardic Lore. So not only are you helping people, you happen to know a lot of stuff, and you can use your Bardic Lore to recall knowledge on any subject you need and have a pretty good chance at doing so. You'll want to make sure that you focus on keeping your occultism as buffed up or as pumped up as you can, which eventually will mean your Bardic Lore becomes, you become an expert in your Bardic Lore and will help you even more so with recalling knowledge. Come 4th level, you can choose the Inspire Defense feat, which grants bonuses to AC instead of granting bonuses to attack in case people need their defenses. It also grants bonuses to saving throws, which is really great. And at 6th level, I'm going to take the Harmonize feat, which lets me get 2 compositions going at once. If combat is something that, or if you're in a combat where your allies need a lot of help, you can inspire courage and inspire defense by harmonizing and grant them all lots of bonuses and, you know, hopefully turn the tide there. At 8th level, I'm going to take Inspire Heroics, which grants you even greater bonuses with Inspire Courage. And finally, at 10th level, I'm going to take Quickened Casting, so you can cast spells very quickly and add in all of your extra stuff. You're doing a lot of support, and getting as many actions as you can is going to be very helpful. It's very classic Bard, lots of inspiration in all varieties, and you're just there to support. You can potentially play halfling or humans, which are very good at aiding to further that theme, but really your bard's going to be able to do most of that on their own.
So, whereas that classic bard is going to help turn the tide, I tried to make a bard that would be the tide. And I'll admit, I'm pretty guilty of making too many humans and too many Vikings. this is not an exception, because I mentioned what I don't like. This is a kind of bard that I do like. This is Gundry, the Viking raider captain who leads charges against the British shores. She's a frontline shielded support type character, warrior background. Her muse is battle. She inspires with her mighty strikes and her just courageous feats at the front lines. We're going to take armor proficiency so we can wear scale mail, toughness to help stay at the front lines. Our first class feat's going to be Viking dedication. We're going to take reactive shield so we can get our shield block up. We're going to take shielded stride so we can get away from attacks of opportunity. We're going to get our other actual bard feat is going to be courageous opportunity, so that we can kind of gain our own version of an attack of opportunity. And then at 10th level, we're going to get quick shield block again from the Viking dedication, so that the attack of opportunity, so that courageous opportunity doesn't compete with reactive shield for that one reaction action that you get each turn. We've got max ranks in athletics, intimidation, so we can swim from the boat to the shore, charge up a cliff, and then scare somebody into giving us everything they own. Some of our fun feats, we've got Pilgrim's Token, because we're a religious bard. This endeavor was blessed by the gods, and that is why we are going to win ties on initiative. We've got Intimidating Prowess to help so that we have to murder just a little bit less when we can coerce people into giving them their goods. Hardy Traveler, because you gotta move by land kind of a lot, and you gotta carry a lot. And I felt like Clever Improviser was really good, because when you're so far away from home and you came by boat, you don't know what's gonna go wrong. You need to be able to handle a little bit of anything. And the kind of spells that we selected, I went with spells that don't really have a visual component, because I don't like that. I just don't think it looks nice. So instead of like, aha, I am obviously casting spells. No. I have been blessed by Odin. I will cast spells like haste. I will cast telekinetic projectile, which isn't like, oh, it's the power of my mind. No. She's just throwing an axe. And it's like, you know, it strikes really hard, you know, that kind of stuff. I think that's cool. Liberating Command, True Strike, Remove Fear. Yeah, because she's inspiring at the front lines. And most importantly, Remove Curse, because you cannot go on a cursed raid. You have to have a blessed raid, you know.
I don't think the Saxons know what's going to hit them.
They don't know what's going to hit them. But Luis, do we know what's going to hit us? What questions have they wrought upon us? From KD Network member, Ron, what do you think about how the occult spell list intersects with the trope of the instrument playing party helping bard? Does anything about that seem like a particularly good fit or a particular disconnect? Because I don't know. That bards having cosmic evil on their spell list, Grim Tendrils, makes any sense.
So the occult spell list, I think, still works for the bard. There are definitely some things that don't match up with the typical image of a bard, the iconic image of a bard. But there's a lot that does match up with that. So basically what you're running into is the fact that the occult spell list has to serve a lot of needs here. There are spells in the list like retrocognition, which lets you make a lot of knowledge checks all at once. There's glibness. There's let's see what else. Read omens. There's a lot in there about learning knowledge and stuff, or helping deal with mysterious things like see invisibility will help you deal with people who are invisible. How mysterious, what's going on here? So there's a lot there. Silence is great for a bard when you think about it. But yes, there are definitely things that don't make a lot of sense for your typical cheery, happy, inspiring, charismatic bard. There's nightmare and phantasmal killer in there, and feeble mind, vampiric exsanguination, because bards are known for stealing people's blood, right?
You make the occult spell list sound like the Force, and like you've got this light side of the spell list and this dark side of the spell list.
I mean, in a way, it kind of is. I think the occult spell list is meant to have the spiritual and mental essences. I forget. Yes, spiritual and mental essences. And what about the spirit and the mind? I mean, that sounds very much like the Force to me. So, anyway, getting back to it, there's a lot there that the bards can do. It just so happens to be that there's a lot else that the bard can tap into in mysterious ways, which I think actually serves as a great inspiration for breaking out of the mold of the typical bard to do interesting things. If you want to be an evil bard that steals people's blood by, I don't know, shouting an evil unknown incantation that's been lost to the ages, great, go for it. The occult list will be there to help you out. But if you want to be happy, cheery bard and sing cool songs that make it so your friends do good things, that's there too.
I like the idea that you have a happy-go-lucky halfling plucking away on her loot, hopping down the street, singing cheery songs and helping everyone out. But then there's like an old bard, like a master bard in the alleyway who's like smoking a cigarette, watching her. The cigarette's being held by grim tendrils and like, like kid doesn't even know what forces they're messing with. You know, like this is just, and then he like sings a song of pain. Like this is why I do kind of think that the occult spell list doesn't make the most sense for the bard when you take it on its whole premise. But well, I agree with you, Luis, that like a lot of parts of it makes a lot of sense. And one good example of how it does make sense is that if you are not a bard per se, if you are a bard archetype, if you are a multi-class bard, then you're not going to get Inspire Courage until you're level 8, which means in the meantime, you still need to be doing bardy things, right? Well, what do you have access to? You have access to this bulk occult spell list. That's all you get for just your regular level 2 archetype feat. But you can still do bardy things with that. Like, you can just do like weaker versions of Inspire Courage via the guidance spell. You do guidance, you do bless, and then you just say like, my song was so beautiful that for one action I give you guidance, you know, stuff like that. Say I'm gonna keep singing, and you get the effects of bless from it. And in that way, I think that the occult spell list kind of fits for the bard.
Yeah, and if the occult spell list were all songy, performancey bard stuff, it would be really weird the moment you choose to be an occult witch and suddenly are just stuck with weird bard songs. No, it's gotta do a lot of work here.
I think there's a disconnect out of necessity.
Yes. So if you want it to be very bardy, it's all available for you. But if you want to be a different type of bard, there's options there for you as well. Maybe we should talk about the occult spell list sometime in the future and break it down. But for now, let's move on to our next question, which comes in from our patron, Jaina B. who asks, just because the summoner is a hot topic right now, there's the playtest going on for the summoner. What are your thoughts on a bard slash beast master?
So I have two thoughts on this. One is my mind immediately goes to the classic story of the Pied Piper. That's obviously a bard beast master. Somebody running through the streets, like, playing on a flute and all these mice are following him. Bard Beastmaster. But that's not really, like, useful to, like, playing in Pathfinder. So my second thought with this is that that's really interesting. Because as a bard, the action economy on both of these is, you know, kind of set in stone. Like, as a bard, you have to be doing your Inspire Courage or whatever composition you want to, and that's going to be an action. As a Beastmaster, you have to be guiding your animals. Typically, that's going to be an action. But there's kind of some interplay here. Like, if the Beastmaster has, like, two pets out, okay, and you spend an action to command a pet, right? And then you spend another action to Inspire Courage, your pets get the benefit of that Inspire Courage. So, you're kind of greater than the sum of your parts, I think. I feel like the Bard Beastmaster is pretty interesting. I'm probably going to fool around with some builds and see if I like it.
Yeah, I was thinking a similar thing where you can focus on helping your animal companion in particular. From what I've seen in play, I have a player who has an animal companion and they're level 19 now. There does reach points where the animal companion's utility falls off just a bit and then kind of comes back up, and it's this weird peaks and valleys kind of thing. But being a bard, you could definitely support your animal companion during those lower moments in the animal companion's career. And it so happens to help your ally. It's great, but you know, you can make sure all your stuff is focused on your animal companion. And the Beastmaster eventually lets you kind of get around that action economy thing by letting your animal companion automatically get one action per turn. So it becomes not so bad. I definitely think there's some potential there. It just really, I don't know. I think it would take a bit of work to make sure it plays in a way that is really good for what you're trying to do, because I feel like it could be very easy to mess up.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think the Beastmaster gets that at, like, level 4. Like, yeah. So you can get around that action economy pretty quick.
Yep.
From user Radium Elemental, a question that I've seen, and this is a long one, folks, so buckle up for this. a question that I've seen a fair bit of off and on is the debate about handling bardic lore, you know, gossip and etc. Generally, you'd give a lower DC to recall knowledge checks with specific lore skills than with more general skills, like dragon lore versus arcana. Bardic lore falls into a weird place since it's the least specific possible lore skill applying to everything. Some people rule that bardic lore should get an easy DC adjustment on everything to account for the fact that you're going to be stuck at trained the whole time and never progress past expert. Others rule that an easy adjustment would never apply because it is supremely non-specific. I'd be interested to hear your takes on it, since that broad knowledge base is such an iconic part of the adventurer bard fiction.
Well, so when we're talking about an easy check, an easy DC for that, it typically the rules state, hey, take whatever the DC is for a level. Let's say a level 10 check is DC 27, right? And to make it an easy check, you lower that DC by 2, so it'd be DC 25. So if you roll Arcana to know about a dragon, it'd be DC 27. But if you happen to have dragon lore, or specifically like white dragon lore or whatever, it'd be DC 25 or even lower than that. And I think that is the way you should go with for the bardic lore. As noted, the bardic lore remains at trained for a very long time, so that proficiency isn't going to go up at all. Any specific lores that you have, you can train higher. You can't do that with the bardic lore until at least 15th level, when you can then increase it to expert, and even still it's pretty behind on a lot of things. But not only that, if you keep the DC at the normal higher value, what's going to happen over time is the bardic lore is going to become less and less useful, and that player will find that they will want to use bardic lore less often, which is not very fun for a player. You want them to be able to feel like they can do all of their class abilities, use all of their class features, all of their class feats at any time to help solve problems and win the day. And not keeping that lower DC means that that's going to happen less and less, and they're going to use that less and less, and then feel like that bardic lore is now a wasted feat. There is the problem of, hey, the bard can roll on anything, and now the wizard, who is a master of arcana, can't know these particular things, also has to compete with the bard every single time. But what's going to happen is the dice are going to be such that the bard's going to know sometimes, the wizard's going to know sometimes, and that's totally fine. And, you know, I think it really comes down to having options for players to be able to do that as often as they can and have fun with it. If it's overshadowing other characters at the table, then that's when you can start considering other things. But by default, I think keep it at an easy DC for bardic lore and let people have their fun with that.
Now, folks, I want to just preface by saying I think you should listen to Luis's opinion on this one. I have a different opinion, and I don't agree with Luis, but I still think you should listen to him because I am not a developer. he has more meta knowledge about what goes on behind the scenes and keeping players happy. I'm still going to give you my opinion. I don't think you should leave it easy. I think you should just rule it normal DC by level. And the fact of the matter is that the bardic knowledge is this collection of things that you've heard, songs you've known, people you've talked to. If you're trying to figure out information about, like, this lich who used to plague the countryside, sure, the bard might be able to roll bardic knowledge to recall what their name was or something, because maybe that was in a song. But there's no way that the bard is going to roll bardic knowledge and figure out exactly where the phylactery was, because that was not in the verse of some song. It wasn't. The wizard should have an easier time with this. Like, the people who know the specifics should have an easier time. And if the bard's falling behind, it's not like they're going to have a 0% chance to know stuff. Like, this is just like a smattering of knowledge. Like, I heard this one thing at college once. Like, let them have a 25% chance to get it. Like, that's fine. Like, that's fine. They don't need to be better than that. But again, I still think you should go with what Luis says on this. That's my opinion, and I wouldn't take it if I were you.
Lauren, I would argue that knowing the lich's name and maybe where the lich used to live, that can be general lore, that bardic lore can. But knowing where the phylactery is, I don't think even the wizard should know what that is. I think that should be something that the party has to research and find out on their own, and just a single recall knowledge check won't tell you what that is, regardless of how good your skill is.
I already conceded the win to you, Luis.
I know, but I'm just saying, in
you
that
don't
case,
gotta rub it in.
No, I'm saying that, like, If you're running a game, don't just give people where the phylactery is for free with a single skill check. Make them work for it.
Well, for sure. For sure. Our next question is from user Brian Lane. How would you make a party of all bards work? And how long would an average GM last under such torture?
Well, I think the easiest thing you can do to have an all bard party is recognize that they don't all have to be 100% bard all of the time. You can have a bard who then multi-classes into fighter, or multi-classes into viking, for example. or you can have someone who is a champion and then multi-classes into bard and still has that bardic stuff going on. Really, you can sprinkle in as little or as much of bard as you want and have an entire group that works just fine. I think if you want it to be 100% all bard all the time, then I recommend everyone take a different muse. There are now 4 different muses, so that's a party of 4, and that's a typical adventuring party, and you can make that all work differently. And people can support the warrior bard to, you know, be a frontliner for as long as that works out. And the maestro will support everyone else. And the polymath can help you, I guess, solve random situations and adapt to things. And the enigma will keep knowledge on hand, except for maybe where the lich's phylactery is, because no one knows where that is. But the all-bard group can work. I think you just need to recognize that it's not all 100% bard all the time, and that suddenly makes it a much more interesting party. And I guess GM torture comes down to how much your players decide to lean into the bard stereotypes. If every bard comes into town, goes to the tavern, and tries to find someone to meet up with for the night, yeah, that might get kind of annoying. And who knows? That probably only lasts one or two sessions there. But you can make interesting bards by mixing in a lot of different stuff, which makes for interesting parties and interesting campaigns.
Not only do I agree with you, Luis, but I have agreed with that for years because I have been wanting to make an all-bard whole campaign for so long. I want everybody to be a bard. They're all these teenagers in a band, right? And their epic quest is to get across the country so they can see their favorite performer at this huge music festival. But every little thing just keeps going wrong along the way. It's such a classic, like, funny story. And the way
battle of the bards, battle of the bands.
Yeah, and the way I'd make this work is that I'd tell all my players going into this, look, I'm giving you a free archetype feat every level. But either your main class has to be bard or your free archetype feat has to be bard. That way everybody's still a bard. And then to make it kind of fun and kind of interesting, to make it unique and, like, worth, like, cooperating together, I'd let all of their composition bonuses or all of the things that they kind of flavor as, like, a bonus, like guidance and stuff, I'd let all of that stack when they're all playing their songs together. It might get a little overpowered and out of hand, but, you know, I mean, these fun stories about just a group of random kids, like, trying to make it to a battle of the bands get out of hand. Let stuff get out of hand. It'd be fun. And then the real question I'd have with this is not how long me as the GM would last. It's how long the players would last in this just zany, just crazy story. But that's enough zany and crazy stories for today. Make sure you check out the rest of our content on the No Direction Network. If you like this show or any of our other blogs or shows, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/nodirection because it's the support of our patrons that make this all possible.
Until next time, I'm Luis.
And I'm Lauren.
Thanks for listening to Legend Lore. And as always, it's been legendary.